Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club for this morning. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Good morning to you, Adam White.
Yeah, good morning. I really enjoy this time of year because I think it's great when all the other sports start. It's always really exciting that it's not just to focus on one sport. We all obviously love our AFL, but last night it was great to sit down and watch the Melbourne United play its first game. The A-League obviously starts this weekend, which will have a lot of people interested.
No doubt. We've got the
domestic cricket starting. Obviously, trade week, still plenty of interest there. So, it's really good. I enjoy this time of year.
I'm with you. There's plenty going on. A breadth of sports you can get your teeth into.
When we get to November, the test matches start, the golf. Good time of year. So I know a lot of people get flat because the footy's finished and you go...
No, you can't.
The issue with the footy finishing is more the Friday night activity and the default position of sitting on the couch all Sunday and Saturday night and all that sort of stuff. But you start to integrate other sports into your lifestyle.
You'd be out there riding bikes with your children.
Or chasing children on bikes.
Yeah, well, a slightly different concept, but I appreciate the fact you're involved. Adam Romanaskis is always involved in everything in life. He's all over it. He's the number one man when it comes to player movement this time of year. Speaking of the trade period, good morning, Rama.
Good morning. You can't forget there's the NBA starting soon, Whitey. The baseball, Major League Baseball's still going at the moment. The NFL's going at the moment.
It's one I can't quite get into, the baseball.
I'm fully aware of these sports that I may be participating in as a fan in the next couple of weeks.
Because everybody goes, when the football season finishes, oh, there's nothing to watch. There's nothing to do. There is plenty on it. Look, I'm a sports lover, so I just... Last night was fantastic with the NBL starting and Melbourne United doing so well, particularly with our Chris Goulding last night, who unbelievably was in hospital with appendicitis.
Flat as attack for the big fella I am.
We spoke to him yesterday or the day before.
Wednesday, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Wednesday we spoke to him and he's all up and about. He gets to Adelaide and he gets appendicitis.
It's
hospitalised, not going to Oklahoma for the OKC game.
That's a real shame.
Correct, yes. Yeah, this is
the
situation with Chris at the moment. Not only does he miss the opener, he doesn't get to go to the States to play OKC. So a real disaster for CG43.
And half, we can't also forget Friday night start at the Valley.
Well,
Money Valley.
Money Valley is always a ripper on Friday night. Of course, we were there last Friday night for the Moya.
Yeah, and it's a great atmosphere there too on a Friday night. I live close to Moonee Valley, so I've been there a few Friday nights, and it's a lot of fun with friends.
I love the Valley on a Friday night. It's one of the great things to do.
I thought that we would be seeing a lot of player movement in the next couple of weeks. What about the CEO movement?
Yeah, I know. It's bizarre.
Does anyone know how this has happened?
No one knows how this has happened. I'm looking forward to talking to Jeff about this type of stuff a little bit later on. But, Stephen Trigg, man down yesterday. Man down, man down. They were yelling at Visy Park. Stephen Trigg, gone. There was a suggestion. Caro had an article yesterday before this all unfolded that there was some concern and some unrest perhaps at Carlton at that level from the board for Stephen Trigg. But the trigger was pulled, pardon the pun, pretty quick yesterday. And he said in his press release or part of the press release yesterday, it was slightly earlier than would be ideal. Or I'll find that quote in the release. So suggestions that perhaps this was going to happen sooner rather than later, but not so much now.
Yeah, it's been an interesting couple of weeks for Carlton because obviously when your CEO is sacked and quite sort of unexpectedly, that's dramatic enough. But even from the point of view of the players that had been linked to Carlton that are not going to Carlton, so you think of Tom Rockliffe, a lot of people thought that the Blues were the front runners there. They've missed out there. They were certainly into Josh Kelly. That didn't happen. Devin Smith, my understanding was very keen on Carlton. Now he's chosen Essendon. It's an interesting time for the Blues. Just a bit of a challenge. I wouldn't say it's anything more than that. But for things that were sort of heading in the right direction in so many ways, I think that's a little bit of a surprise when the CEO who has seen a period of change under his regime doesn't sort of see it through.
And while this is an earlier than ideal decision by the board to make a move, it's understood, said Stephen Trigg yesterday. So perhaps he knew he was in the gun, but this is much earlier than perhaps anticipated by him.
Yeah, these are a little bit like logo-type announcements.
Which would suggest that he wasn't overly happy.
Yeah, you don't really read too much.
Well, no, see, I read a bit into that. I read that what the hell's going on here? Why have you done this? That's what I read into that. He's come out and it's all very nice because he's working at the footy club until somebody takes over. So you don't want to come out swinging and go down swinging, so you've still got to be there. So I read into that, what the hell's going on? Why have you pushed me out?
Yeah, and staying till they find somebody else is to make sure that he's considered for other jobs in the future.
Well, that's right, yes. Yes, not to be throw the toys out of the cot and everyone thinks you're a clown.
That's right.
Well, you think of the Bulldogs, Hawthorn, Collingwood and Carlton all need new CEOs, and Geelong will need one at the end of next year.
Yeah, it's interesting. No,
that's a lot.
And it's interesting to see what clubs do now because they're... I get the feeling there's starting to be a small tendency to get a younger type of CEO in those positions to really, and I'm not having a go at any of these guys, but be sort of more up with modern sort of times, if you sort of understand what I mean by that.
Seeing the dinosaurs?
Well, no, the social media world now and how that's playing out and the importance of that to the supporter base and how
to
they
connect
use
with fans.
To connect. That's right. So, and I'm not saying those guys are dinosaurs by any means, but you look across sporting organisations across the world, and the younger type of CEO or executive is what's being employed.
Yeah, I know that Dan wants to chat to us, but before we do, I just want to sort of get a temperature in the room type feeling from you, Rama. It's a new thing at the moment, temperature in the room. It just in regards to free agency obviously opens today. The trade period opens tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We didn't really get a chance to talk to you extensively yesterday about it. Is the feeling that this is getting serious? This is getting quite expansive now? Because I thought we were starting to think, there's a lot of players that are going to stay at their clubs. There's not going to be a big trade period. It looks like it might be now.
I think it'll be expansive. I've got no doubt about that. Now, what you want the listeners to understand is it's the conversations that come from left field that that you're not prepared for that take the most work in the shortest amount of time. So there's a lot of stuff that we have done already as a company over the last 3 or 4 months that will most likely happen through the next little period of time. But it's the curly ones that pop up and you're all of a sudden scratching your head going, okay, how are we going to do this in this short amount of time?
Especially when a lot of players might be overseas.
That's right. And that's the difficult
part. Contact.
That's the difficult part.
Hard to have those face-to-face discussions because when the ones that do come from left field and you're trying to hunt down people in Panama and Mexico and Oktoberfest and all that sort of thing, it can be quite problematic.
It's such a... expansive period now that most players are mentioned at one stage or another, regardless of your standing at the football club. The clubs will just ask. They'll ask the question, whether you're in contract, whether you're coming out of contract, clubs will ask the question.
Danny Pascavale wants to ask the question. He's given us a call on 1300 652 927. Good morning, Dan.
Yeah, morning, boys. Just a question about Daniel Menzel. Probably not so much to you, Rama, as a manager, but more to Whitey, looking at the rumour that Fremantle are interested in Menzel, and probably looking at Fremantle's track record over the past few years, and knowing that Ross, when a mistake is made, probably Ross Lyon's probably the person to make sure that it's not made again. Fremantle have gone and they've been through the Anthony Morabito experience, keeping him through 4 knee recos. They've then went and got Gumbleton, who had a ravaged injury history. Colin Sylvia, who mentally wasn't right in his last probably 2 years at Melbourne, and that didn't work. I think as a club, Fremantle pursued those players. I think now, with the interest in Menzel, would Ross put his foot down? And even with Bennell playing 2 games in 2 years, would Ross now say, look, I'm really not prepared to roll the dice on a player that's played 50 games in 8 years because of injury?
Well, I can tell you, Dan, my understanding is that Daniel Menzel is likely to go to Fremantle. I think you'll find that Fremantle will have a very different-looking team next year. I think there's quite a few players that will find themselves at Freo, very different sort of team. So I think you've got to be a little bit careful with Daniel Menzel because I think he's an excellent player, and I know Rama can't say too much here, so I'm talking from my behalf. But I mean, he's kicked pretty much 75 goals in his last 35 matches. I think that's about where it sits at the moment. And I think Fremantle need to find more avenues to goal. I think you'll find that Brandon Matera will be at the footy club next year as well. You're going to get Nathan Wilson off halfback. So I think it's going to be a different team, and I think you'll find that Daniel Menzel will be in it.
Yeah, look, I think I think he's a great fit for Fremantle. No, I'm not saying he's going to Fremantle, but I think he's a great fit for that forward line. You look at Cam McCarthy there, you look at Shane Kirsten there. They are looking. They're on the lookout for other avenues to goal. And as Whitey said, 75 goals in 35 games over the past 2 years is as good as any general forward in the comp.
And I think the key to it, thanks for the call, Dan, I think the key to Menzel there, the goals are great, but he's played 35 games in 2 years. So I think the knee thing now is a thing of the past.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
And that's 35 games. He's also played some games in the VFL during that period as well. So, I think there's... Him and Watts half have been treated a bit harshly through this period. There's this fascination with what they can't do as opposed to what they can do.
You're sounding a lot like Jimmy Bartel, you are.
No, but particularly with those two. And, you know,
it's unfortunately society.
Melbourne are pushing Jack Watts out, essentially.
Yeah,
and
no doubt.
There are clubs that are clambering all over the top of Jack Watts. He's got a lot of options. A lot of options.
It's good news for Jack, and it might be good news for a club as well. We'll see where it all unfolds and where it leads.
So we've got Fremantle. I reckon they'll be a very different-looking team. I reckon Geelong will be a very different-looking team as well. There are a lot of players that want to go to Geelong. So don't worry about just Ablett. A lot of players showing interest in heading down the highway.
I'll tell you who'll be a different-looking team, the Bombers. 55 players have requested that they go to Bombers.
Hey, destination club.
Oh, give me a spell.
Destination club.
Rumours happen and rumours come around, and until it's actually done, I won't get too excited about anything. He's obviously a quality AFL player. He's been in the system now quite a few years and knows what it's like to play AFL footy. And I'd be excited if he got to a footy club, but I haven't met him because I haven't been around. I've been too busy trying to get my handicap down.
Too busy trying to get my handicap down, said David Zaharakis from the Bombers, talking about the possible acquisition of Jake Stringer through the free agency / trade period, which free agency kicks off today, doesn't it? Does it?
It does, yeah.
It does.
It does, working day before the
And there'll be a couple that get done today.
So let's get to that before we go back to Zaharakis. Who gets done today? Tringove?
Yeah, I think so, yep.
From Port to Bulldogs?
Yep.
Rockcliffe?
I think so.
Goes to Port?
Most likely.
No, that it will definitely be the case.
It will definitely be the case. And what's most likely boy doing over here?
Well, he's just a player manager, so he's just watching from afar.
Well, I reckon he might know a bit more than from afar. He's giving us nothing.
Port Adelaide, it's really interesting because Rockcliffe, as I said, that will get done, and I think that is a great fit for Port. And
Port Adelaide could end up with Stephen Motlop and Jack Watts also.
Yeah, I think... Motlop probably more so than Watts. I think the race is on for Watts. Motlop, I reckon he's probably got two choices. And I think it's a really interesting one with Motlop. I think he can either do the... How can I put this? He can make the hard decision to go to Port Adelaide, or he can make the easy decision and go to Gold Coast.
I think the easier decision is to go to Port Adelaide because he's got family connections there.
Yep.
The harder decision will be to go to Gold Coast without the support.
Yep. I reckon he'll have to work harder if he goes to Port.
Well, he'll get a game at Gold Coast. We know that.
Well, that's my... Yeah, I think he'll get a game at Port Adelaide, but I think he'll have to really earn... And it's just the nature of where Gold Coast are at, so there's no disrespect to Gold Coast, but I think he could go up to Gold Coast and he could sit on a wing on $800,000 a year and just play football.
Yeah, new coach might change a bit of
Maybe, but I think at Port Adelaide, he's really going to have to... put his head down, and the rewards will be more significant in the short term. But I think that he probably won't get as much money. And as I said, I think he'll be driven a lot harder to get the best out of him.
We'll speak to Mark Evans later, but I'm with you. I get the feeling there's going to be significant change in that, particularly a cultural shift again at Gold Coast. Mm. About guys thinking they can just go there and enjoy the sun and the surf. I think there might be a hardened edge about that football club moving forward.
Imagine Port Adelaide, the luxury they're going to have of being able to sort of essentially rotate Robbie Gray and Tom Rockliffe forward inside the centre square.
Unbelievable. It's a great
problem. It's such a luxury. Yeah. And then what do they do with Wingard?
Some players you've just got to let float around the field.
Yeah.
And just work out. Like, understand structures and all that type of stuff, but there's particular players within the competition that you go, you know what? You work it out there. Where you think we need you, you go and be that player.
There's a new word in football, Half.
What's
which
that?
You would know because of your role as an assistant coach at the Collingwood women's team.
That's right.
Side by side.
Players that play with.
New logo.
Players that either play or create shape.
Oh, yes. Keep your width, shape players.
And I think Wingard falls very much into that category.
I think the Chad falls into that category comfortably. Speaking of players moving, and not so much the Chad, just players moving, but I do like referencing the Chad any time. The Stringer situation, going back to the David Zaharakis grab there, Stringer situation of the Bombers, Devin Smith is likely to nominate the Bombers. We believe Adam Saad wants to go to the Bombers. How do they get these players? Because I imagine by the time it's got to a point where the players come out and nominate their clubs, this isn't just news to the club.
No.
That Essendon, in this example, have been in contact with these players saying, yeah, we'd love to get you. We want you. Nominate us and we'll find a way.
Yeah.
How do they get them?
Well, the difficulty first is none of these guys are free agents. So it's got to have to, going to have to be a trade scenario. So you go back to the example of when Geelong were able to execute the trades a couple of years ago. Dangerfield came in as a trade in the end. It wasn't a free agency scenario. Zach Smith come in, Lockie Henderson come in, Scott Selwood come in. So the way that Geelong were able to manufacture those trades, I think Essendon will be looking at quite clearly to say, well, how do we actually go about doing this? And that's to say if Essendon want all those guys. I think, to your point, Half, if they're nominating Essendon, well, yes.
The club's already said, yeah, come
along. The club's already said, come along. But you've still got to execute a trade. Now, you only have a certain amount of picks in this year's draft, and you only have a certain amount of picks in next year's draft. So I think what Essendon will do is prioritise which players they want out of those three guys, and it'll just be the domino effect. You get your first one, and you move on to your second one like that.
And I think what they've been able to do, Half, Essendon, over the last few years is stockpile quite a few picks inside 20, and a lot of that's been through unique circumstances. But even guys like Langford and Francis, who I rate quite highly, they fall into the category of potentially being players that might be used.
And that's where Essendon need to be really careful.
Yeah, and I was just about to say, it's a delicate balancing act for them, because I think in an ideal world, they definitely want to keep all of those players. But for these players coming in, they might need to offload one of them. And, you know, Langford's being sort of almost trained up as the one to be the new Joe Watson.
Yep.
Francis, you know, he's had a few personal issues, but also they're sort of spending a lot of time being patient with him, and they think that the best is to come out of him, but they want to keep him.
I'm sure.
But how do they do it?
I'm sure. We've got 11 and 28 in the draft. They're the two picks.
Yeah.
In the first 30.
What they want to do is try and get another pick in the early 20s and package up, say, 22 and 28 and try and get another pick sort of inside 15 and then use that as something. They'll try and be creative.
Good luck. Is all I'll say, because three players aren't going to come cheap.
I know we're getting some waving going on.
Yeah, a lot of waving.
But will it mean that there's a chance that a player will leave Essendon unexpectedly?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'll go, whoa, didn't expect that.
Well, if you get all those three guys in, and as Haas said, you've got 11 and 28 as it stands right now, you're going to have to use all those picks somewhere. You're going to have to, what you're going to have to do is probably trade 11 and get, talk to a club and maybe, I don't know, talk to Richmond and get their 17 and 18 or whatever they've got for 11. You're going to have to work some magic early in the trade period.
Marcus Fraser is not in the stable at the moment. He's out there ready on course to play in the Alfred Dunhill Championship, which is a fantastic event over there in the UK, St Andrews, at the moment. And he's playing with Beefy Botham. Ian Botham, the great Beefy. I want to find out what it's like playing with the big Beefy and how he's tracking himself. Marcus, g'day.
Gents, how are we?
We are very well, mate. How's yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. It's not so sunny Scotland at the moment, but a bit fresh over here, and I think it's about 11 or 12 degrees today, so it's feel free to warm up over the next few days, and Yeah, is it a little bit crisp this morning? Well, first group off, so quite crisp off the first tee this morning.
Now, just explain for our listeners that may not know that the format for this Alfred Dunhill Lynx Championship.
So you partner an amateur. I mean, most of the guys and girls are they're paying to play this week, and I think they pay around to anywhere between £15,000 and £20,000 just to play in the event. And then they also invite quite a few celebrities and whatnot over the course of the week. So there's a lot of cricketers and a lot of rugby players. Obviously, Johan Rupert is the owner of the tournament, and he invites who he wants because it's his tournament, so which is fair enough. And his passion is cricket and rugby, so there's a lot of those guys around.
I just see at the top of the leaderboard, too, that Shane Warne and Ryan Fox are 11 under in lead all comers. So, speaking of cricketers, Warney's hot to trot after the first little round there. You've got Ian Beefy both and the great English cricketer. What's he like to play with?
Yeah, he's great. I hadn't met Ian before today, so I had a quick chat to him on the putting green this morning, and off we went. We're off going all right, but we didn't have a great finish. But yeah, great guy, and it was pretty cool to sort of walk around Carnoustie with someone like him, and just a very genuine person that it's good fun to play alongside, and his career speaks for itself. So to sort of hopefully learn a few things with him over the course of the next few days, but just a very genuine bloke and good laugh, and he's pretty competitive out there, and he plays off 12s, but he's got I think a handicap of 9 this week. They get a little bit of a discount off their handicap, so. But it's good fun. He's a great guy.
Well, this is a bit of a revelation, Marcus, because I thought you actually got to choose your partner for the Dunhill, but they're chosen for you.
I think there's a few guys that get to choose, but I think it's a bit of a lottery, most of it. But I was quite happy when the draw came out with Ian, and all the guys up here this week, they're. But even the guys that play, pay to play in the event, they're just golf tragics. They love the game and they play all year. They're almost professional amateurs. They're playing more golf than what we do. So they're all good fun. And I don't think there's ever been a golf tournament where there's more private jets parked at an airstrip this week. There's a serious bit of money flying around this week, that's for sure.
And there's a serious...
And it's not from any of the professionals.
And there's a serious prize pool as well, a purse for you guys to play for. It's a prestigious event. I've always wanted to know, how hard is it to focus on your own game when you're playing, seems like massive groups of six, or how long does the round take and how much does it actually take away from your own game, what's going on around you?
Yeah, it's not quick out there, but at the same time, as I said before, I mean, the guys and ladies that play, they're golf tragics, and, it's a four-ball, best-ball format, so as soon as they're out of the hole, they pick up and they're out of the way and whatnot, but, I think it's probably our best week of the year on the European Tour. It's just because it's so different. I think there's three pretty iconic golf courses with, you're playing with, the celebrities and amateurs out there, and you're in Scotland playing golf, so it doesn't get much better, I don't think. And on these golf courses, and it'd be nice. I mean, one day I think Melbourne probably should have something very similar around Kingston Heath and Royal Melbourne, and with celebrities, it'd be a great format. Hopefully it happens soon, because it's I think we've got equally as good golf courses, and I think there's definitely an opportunity there for it to happen, so hopefully one day it does. But it's a great tournament. I think the celebrities really make the tournament this week. We all know how boring golf professionals are, so it's nice to have some celebrities out there to really ramp up the tournament. It's a brilliant tournament. It's probably my favourite of the year.
Morning, Dino.
Morning. Half a bit nervous. Prime time. I'm very excited.
If anyone could step up to these sort of moments, Dino, I reckon it's you.
Let's hope.
I reckon you can. You'll be fine. A big weekend to get through. We'll get to it shortly. And the man who, I was reading the paper this morning, there would have been no happier man on the planet when he read inside page 2 of the Herald Sun, the notoriously conservative Victoria Racing Club has changed member rules so that blokes Says blokes. It's unbelievable. No longer need to wear socks in the birdcage and members enclosure at Flemington. It is unbelievable. You can be show your ankles willy-nilly. Nick Quinn loves that news from the Tab. Good morning, Quinny.
I'm a big socks man half. I reckon they're an essential part of when you get dressed in the morning, and I will not be taking that into account.
I would have thought you would have been one of those trendy hipster type dudes that just goes the no-sock option.
Yeah, you know I'm not fashionable at the best of time. When I came in this morning wearing a coffee, which was not part of my plan, it was certainly another indication of why I sometimes struggle to walk and chew gum at the same time.
Do you roll your trousers up at the bottom, just a tight roll, just to sort of show those ankles?
It doesn't say the rolls are welcome at Flemington. It says no socks are okay, but not the roll. I'm not sure.
Now, there'll be some metrosexuals up and about from this news, though. The likes of Adam Hamilton that put a lot of effort into their style and making sure they look good at the track. I don't care what you look like, just got to find a winner.
Are you wearing socks today, Nick?
No, I'm wearing thongs.
Okay.
As in the sandal variety.
Dino, are you a no socks sort of fella?
No, I'll be socked at the Spring Carnival, but Nick could get away with it because I'd be looking at the bouffant and not looking at the ankle.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what we'll be looking at tomorrow, Dino, and that is Winx. She is in town on the Cox Plate Trail, and while she's not a leg of the quaddie, which we normally focus on, she is part of the feature event of the program, the Turnbull Stakes over the 2,000 metres. Let's have a look at that field. Only seven going around, Dino, and you would think, one would think, that there are really only two contenders. Winx, of course, who's the superstar, and then Humidor, who seems to be the emerging star.
Yeah, it seems that way, half. It'll be really interesting in how it's run. I'm pretty sure a sign would roll along in front and lead, and the Lloyd Williams, Rob Hickman horses often lead at a good gallop, so that should be suitable for everyone. And, it'll be Winx v. Humidor. I've got interest in watching how Ventura Storm's progressing because I think he's a really good Melbourne Cup chance, but not as a winning chance tomorrow. But it will be a fascinating race. I think the interesting thing about Winx is that when you think of her miraculous wins, like her last two wins, even her Epsom and Doncaster wins have been at 1,600, but her really clinical wins have been at 2,000 metres when she's won the Cox Plate and the Queen Elizabeth. So I think she's getting into more her range where she's absolutely at her most comfortable.
And I read with interest as part of the gear chain situation that the Winx has earmuffs off for the first time today, tomorrow.
Yeah, she's had them on for the two runs after she missed the start in the Warwick Stakes, and I think they sort of dulled her senses to probably too much, and that's why she's been getting that little bit further back. But she's into her preparation now. She was probably a little bit fresh at that first run. That's why she missed the start. She's just playing up a bit in the barriers. Got that sorted, all being well, you know, she'll settle midfield here and we'll hopefully see her at her best, which she continually does.
Now, there's been lots of talk during the week about Magical and Skyfire going around in this race, both 300-1 chances, and some narcs say there should be a zero or two missing from that price. Would you reckon this race would be better with five horses or the seven and those two in the field?
I'd probably say five, but whilst the rules are there, they've taken advantage of it. Magical did win a Group 1 early in his career, but that's nearly in a different life now, and Skyfire's just he's a 61 rater, but he's eligible, so they're there, but I just hope they don't detract from the race in the way that's run, but I don't think the way their racing styles are that they will.
So that's an interesting point. You've got horses that clearly aren't up to it, Dino, is what we're saying here. Do they try and just get out of the way and earn the money, or they put themselves in the traffic?
Well, I think Skyfire essentially races back off the speed, so I don't think he'll be in any part of the speed battle. Magical was up there a little bit in the Benalla Cup last week, and he's drawn one, so they'll probably, if he goes forward, they could even get around him if and when he starts fatiguing. So, I'm showing my age here, but I remember a horse in a similar situation called Moist was about 1,000-1 in a Caulfield Stakes one year, and the Lawman ran straight up the back of him and probably should have beaten Kingston Town and didn't. But I don't think that'll be a scenario tomorrow.
That would be pretty unpopular if either of these two horses did block the path of the Mighty Mare Winx.
Yeah, no, I don't think it'll be happening.
I know that Hugh will let it happen either. Yeah.
No, he's in pretty good control of the situation.
Right, any movers in the market, Quinny?
Look, Humidor was well backed off the back of the nominations at a $14 chance. Now the 460 second elect, but the Mighty Mare Winx has firmed from $1.20 into $1.15. One bet during the week of $94,150 at the $1.15. That's a profit of $14,122.50 should she carry on her winning ways.
Rightio. There you go. Quinny's doing the math for us here on the Friday form. That's the Turnbull. That's race five. Race six is the first leg of the quaddy. Let's get to that because that's what we do for those first-time players out there in Breakfast Club land. Let's have a bit of a look at the quaddy for the Saturday with Dino and Quinny. And
race which six, Dino jagged last Friday night.
Which he got last Friday night, yes, by the way. Did. Yes, well we should done, reference Dino. That. Just another one for Dino.
A little something.
Race six is the first leg over the mile, the Edward Manifold Stakes, the TAB Edward Manifold Stakes for Group 2 three-year-old fillies event on the way to the Oaks. Many of these, hopefully, for the stables and connections. They've got a full field of 16 going around, Dino. As we mentioned, it was on the way to the Oaks, a lot of these horses. So how hard is it to get a read on this form over a mile?
Yeah, I think you've probably got a couple heading that way, or probably three or four, and a few of these, if they happen to win well, might even back up next week in the 1,000 guineas. But I think it's going to be a good race for Darren Weir. I think Leather and Lace deserves to be favourite off the back of her win last start. Anchor Bid disappointed last time out, but the blinkers go on and a much better barrier draw here. I think she can certainly improve. So that's the Weir runner's covered. And then there's already been a scratching of Temple of Bell, so the emergency gets into the race here, High Arm, and I wouldn't to be saying it couldn't win just off a maiden win last start, but it's going to get a great run here, and I just think it's an improver. And the top one, Pure Scott, she might be more of an Oaks filly, but the blinkers go on here, and I thought she made up good late ground behind Leather and Lace last start. So they're the main four for me. The other one I'll include in the quaddy is number 7, Banish, who chased home Leather and Lace at Caulfield also.
All right, so Leather and Lace is the selection, I think, from Dino there, yep. Quinny. And I wouldn't mind betting. Well, I know that the O'Brien stable has a bit of an opinion of Watch Me Spin as well. Number 5 is more of an Oaks filly as opposed to a Manifold filly. Yeah,
there seems to be more tips than a can of asparagus for the Oaks this year. And I dare say half the connections tomorrow will be just wanting to see their horse hit the line nicely. There's been good money for Leather and Lace, who heads the market at $3. Anchor Bid 8 into 7. And High Am, who Dino gave a good push the 4.23 into 18, so maybe one of odds for the quaddie. From an Oaks perspective, Dino, you did mention Pure Scott, but I dare say there'll be lots of these runners looking to hit the line strongly. Do you think maybe not winning chances tomorrow, but some that might improve over more ground?
Yeah, maybe. And it's a time of year where then the pressure's put on them and whether they stand up to it, because they're very young horses still. And as you said, there's a lot of Oaks candidates at about a month out, and then it just dwindles down late. So, yeah, we'll be watching with interest tomorrow with regard to that.
Did you notice that Leather and Lace has graduated from an early
male
selection?
Yeah, early male. I was going to give you some credit there, Whitey.
Favourite for the Manifold Stakes. That's sort of, that is Hall of Fame type of stuff.
It was a great spot from you, Adam.
It
well
was
done.
Very good, wasn't it, Dana?
Yeah.
I don't know how it happened, but it just did.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah. I've got a feeling I know how it happened.
Well, he's got a track record of getting information from experts.
Yes, it's notorious. We'd like to say that. So that's the first leg of the quaddy. 1, 3, 4, 7, 17 seem to be the numbers at this stage, Quinny.
I'll just ask Dino about one more, number 15, Snogging, who wanted to chew last start, only because Damien Oliver said he's very bullish about her heading towards the Oaks. Do you share his optimism?
She hasn't got the pedigree to be an Oaks filly, but she gives the impression that she might that run that sort of trip. Her win last start was effortless, and again, she's one that you're just interested tomorrow. She's got a good draw, so she can have a really cheap run and see where she's at.
She's $51. I was scared to get a tip off Ollie and not have something on. So.
Fair enough. Chuck her in. I'm Invincible Philly. Snogging. Great name, too, just by the way. Race 7 is the Bart Cummings over the 2,500 metres quality Group 3 event. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Dino, automatic qualification for the Melbourne Cup.
Exemption from the ballot half, yes, absolutely. So it's a free ticket in tomorrow if you win this race, although I think the likely winner's already very well qualified.
And that would be El Mandin, you referring
I
to?
I would say so. He's in stunning form. He's come back in great shape. He's a Melbourne Cup winner already, and he's under the quality handicap conditions of this race. He's just absolutely thrown into the race, and he's just got to have reasonable luck, and I think he'll win again. I'll be putting one extra in for the quality, and that's Amelie Starr, because I've been batting up for her, and she's had no luck at all. She's finally drawn a good barrier at a trip that she hasn't raced at 2,500, but her two runs at 2,400 have been spectacular. So I'll be putting her in the quaddie as well. But El Mandan, I think, is a bit of a standout for the day, and Amelie Starr the danger.
All the rage, Quinny?
Yeah, 2.20 into as short as even money, just out slightly to $2.05. Do you reckon that's a fair price, Dino?
I think it is. He's just might be a freak stayer, as with what we've seen of him. He's already won a Melbourne Cup and he's building towards another one.
If Quinny, if Elmandon was to win tomorrow, where do you see its starting price for the Melbourne Cup being?
That's an excellent question, because I think the next question is how short can he possibly get for the Melbourne Cup, because he was $13 before he won last start. The bookies wound him into $9 and he's subsequently been backed from $9 into $6. He could get down to Maccabi Diva sort of odds of $4 or $5 on the day. So would you anticipate taking the $6 now, Dino, or do you think you'll get something similar on the day?
Well, he's an interesting case study, because last year after he won this race, he got into about $10 for the Melbourne Cup, and then on the day he started $16, because he didn't race for 4.5 weeks, so he went out of sight, out of mind, and he's going to do that again. This will be his last run leading in, so he could be spectacularly impressive tomorrow, and then the next 4 weeks we'll see other contenders, so I'd probably hold your fire.
Conspiracy theory, did they run it quietly tomorrow, so they punch the odds back up?
They're running for $6 million in prize money. Exactly. I don't think that's a worry.
Exactly.
I don't think the odds are really that much of a worry.
Funny Lloyd needs the money.
Not really. He's on the bit.
We're halfway through the quaddy legs. We've got 6 and 7 down, 8 and 9 to come. And race 8, boys, is the Blazer Stakes over the 1,400 metres for the mares, 4-year-old and up. Group 2 edition, 16 going around, Dino. And Miss Rock, who, she's been a bit unlucky the last couple of starts.
Yeah, well, she stayed at the 1,000 metres 2 starts back, and they were just a bit sharp for her. And she ran well last start at Caulfield from a wide draw. She's got a lot better draw tomorrow, so she's a very good chance. I like one of each way odds here in Petition, number 16. I just thought, looking at her last start at Caulfield, she looked as though that run would improve her. And I just thought, gee, this would probably be the target race for her for her preparation. And 1,400 at Flemington really suits her. She showed that back in the autumn when she won here. And I just think she's a terrific each way chance in a very open race. But good chances to 9, Miss Rock. One prompt response, just never runs a bad race, and her first up run was terrific. 7, Euro Angel, who I think is a lot better horse in Melbourne than she is in Sydney, and she has won here at Flemington over 1,400 metres, and Sword of Light, who won here last start. So because we're going pretty light in that second leg, we can throw a few in here. But yeah, principally 16 each way, but chances to 9, 1, 7 and 4.
Well, Petition a 7.50 chance, and there has been money for Sword of Light as well on the back of a nice win last start. Has been back from $16 into 11. Miss Rock heads the market there at $5. But I like this. Got to go in skinny early, and then we've got a couple to play with in this one.
Hang on a second. I'm just going to pull you blokes up. Now, Dino, you know that we have a Hall of Fame horse.
I feel a little bit dirty.
I feel a bit cheated and dirty, a bit uncomfortable. Merriest is one of our favourites here in the Friday form, and it's not included in your numbers.
It's not ideal. She's got me through some tough times. I do like Merriest a little bit better at Caulfield than Flemington, but in saying that, she did beat Petition last start. But I just think the way this race sets up suits Petition a little bit better than Merriest tomorrow.
All right, that's a setback for Merriest fans and for us in here. We feel a bit dirty. But
He takes the emotion out of it. That's what we've got to admire about him.
Feel a bit dirty. Now, you've got Sword of Light on top, Quinny, as your best. Now, that was your coffee bet a couple of weeks ago, Sword of Light.
You're a good man. I'm not sure if that was factual or not, but I did actually find Sword of Light, so it must have been a good win. And I just like the draw again tomorrow. I think we'll be up punching the breeze. Damien Lane's riding well, and at the double-figure odds, I think can run well, but I'll be certainly having something now on number 16 as well, Petition, on the back of that push from Dino.
You do love tipping Damien Lane.
That is true.
He's starting to get back in the good books with me lately, so...
Imagine if you rode Tom Melbourne.
No. Oh. Come on, we nearly got through the whole segment without mentioning Tom Melbourne.
1,479.16 in the third leg of the quaddie. Let's get to the last one, the Paris Lane Handicap. What a horse. Over the 1,400 metres, we've got 15 going around because all our roads are scratched from Chris Waller. New Tipperary is the favourite for Joseph Pride with D. Oliver on board, number 8, Dino.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy to be with him too, Half. He's a pretty talented horse. He just got a little bit too far back first up, but that was a very, very fast race at Randwick. And second up, he's had 4 previous goes for 3 wins and a second. He's had 3 goes at the distance for 2 wins and a second. I just think Joseph Pride's found the absolute perfect race to bring him down for, and I think he'll be very hard to beat. The main dangers, I think Charmed Harmony, who'll be up near the lead, should run well. 15 Pay Up Bro might be the roughie to include. I think he's ticking over okay, and he's got an unusual stat, third up's when he usually fires best, and he's at third up tomorrow. And Tashby's freshened up and back to Flemington, bit of a D-day for him, he might be next best. And if you're going a little bit wider, maybe 10 Royal Tudor on the backup from the Group 1 last Sunday. But I'm pretty keen on New Tipperary to win the last.
$5. That'd be a lovely way to end the day there at headquarters. A couple of runners that I think will intrigue a few punters. The Toppy Burning Front, who's always raced really well at the top level.
He has. He just probably, as he's got older, he takes two or three runs really to hit his straps. And his first up run was no real guide down the straight. He'll run a better race tomorrow, but I'll be looking for him in the next couple of runs, I think, to really fire.
And number 11, Mongolian Wolf, looked an emerging star winning the Packer Plate at Randwick before the wheels fell off at his next two starts.
They did. Just wonder if he's sharp enough to win 1,400 here first up. But, he does add a little bit of interest to the race, but I won't be putting him in a quaddy.
So from the quaddy perspective, do we do two quaddies, maybe one with New Tipperary one out and then take another one with the other couple of runners that you gave a little push for there?
Well, you could certainly take him for a high percentage, yeah. I would agree with that, yeah.
So 4, 6, 8, 15, the numbers, and in no particular order. 8, the tip there from Dino, with Chuck in 10 if you've got extra cash in your flexi tomorrow. That's the quaddy done, which means there's a couple of other things we want to get to. The formula bit not too far away, but Quinny, you were keen on the Gil Guy to discuss the Gil Guy over the 1,200 metres.
Yes, certainly.
What do you got here? What do you got going around here that we need to know about?
Well, I think the most intriguing runner on the program is number 4, Speeth, because this horse looked an emerging Group 1 star, and if he hadn't had bad luck, he wouldn't have had any luck at all in the last 12 months, and it's been nearly a year since his last win. But Dino, he does look nicely placed tomorrow. What did you make of his first up run? What do you make of him tomorrow?
Yeah, he's a really hard horse to assess, I think, because he just needs another win. He's very good down the straight. That first up run, he put in a really big dash from the 600 to the 200, but that last 50 metres, he really wilted. Now, whether added fitness on his side, back to Flemington, he can win. He just needs to win. That's the most important thing. And I think drawn out, he should get that clear air that you were talking about and not get cluttered up.
Now, a fascinating runner, and one that I dare say might be a good one for the multiples, is number 7, Bonzaway, who's just gone from strength to strength this campaign.
Yeah, hard to imagine that what he was doing at Mildura and Seymour would then parlay into winning a pretty handy race last start and beating an Everest runner in Brave Smash. But another challenge again, because he's not that well weighted in this race, but he is going very well. But I like Silent Sedition in this race. I think she's a Group 1 winner, and I think she's trialled quite well, and I think she'll be up near the lead, and I think she'll be hard to run down.
Righto, that's number 6 for that. Playing at home, but I do see the quarterback in this field.
Yeah, well, he won this race last year half, and he came off a lot shorter break last year, so he had a lot more residual fitness than he does tomorrow. He's had two trials. His first trial was good. His second trial, a little bit mixed, but it was on very wet ground. So, look, we're hoping for a good run because Flemington's his playground. He loves the straight track, so we're hoping for a good run, but he is a seven-year-old now. That's the thing. Time's catching up.
Dino, before we get to the formula bet, for us novice and mug punters out there that like to try to get a little bit of a bank and bet on race one, How do you assess these horses with absolutely no form?
Well, they've been through the JLT series. They've been to the trials. And look, trials can often be a good guide. Trials can often be shadow boxing too. You're trying to guess how much they've got in the tank. Off the trials, Sunlight has trialled well on two occasions, so you can pretty well trust that it goes well, and she's also been down the straight. I really liked Bold Type. I've seen it twice. He trialled really well at his home track at Mornington last week. I think it might be a little bit of value, and I think of the Godolphin runners, Sanglier, that Damien Lane rides, I like the way he trialled. A little bit green, but had, I thought, a bit to offer. So they'd be the three I'll be framing my thoughts around. Grand Challenge, the other one from the Hayes Dabney Guard, we've seen all of them in action and a few of them down the straight, so at least we've got a reasonable guide.
And what about tomorrow? Is there something maybe at bigger odds that's caught your eye that we might be able to have a sneaky 5 or 10 on today to build a little bit of a bank and make a book for tomorrow?
A little bit of action at double figure odds. Nick in race 3, number 13, Sir Como. He's a maiden, but I think he's a really promising staying horse, and he probably should have won last week at Benalla, and just think you'll get a great run here with Mark Zara riding. He might be the value for the day.
Jeez, that's a good way to start the day as well. Double figure odds. Adam White, look how excited he is.
Look at the smile on his face.
I just laugh because sitting as double figure odds, Quinny just dismisses it.
It's got to be odds on.
6-4 at best.
Race 3, number 13, Sir Como, a little each way special from Dino before we get to the formula bet with Dino, which is
for Tony DeLulio of Lilydale Half. And for Tony, we're having a $40 win bet, race 7, number 1, El Mandan, $40 the win, race 9, number 8, New Tipperary, and $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 7, number 1, into race 9, number 8, for Tony DeLulio of Lilydale.
morning. Scotty Gullen joins us from the Herald Sun, a national platform superstar these days. Good morning, Scotland.
Morning, Daniel.
Well, who else is going to get a shot at the top office at Carlton? Oh. What happened to Stephen Trigg?
Well, it's funny because he was an AFL... because he had history in Adelaide. Like, we all thought when he got suspended for 6 months, that probably ends your CEO life.
Yeah.
But the AFL supported him, pushed him into Carlton. And from the outside, we figured, like everyone else, oh, yeah, it's a new brand, they've repositioned themselves, new coach. But I think there's been things bubbling along. Their membership isn't great for a club that proclaims to be massive. Like, they're always at the 45, which nowadays, if you want to be part of the big four...
I think that would go to 60 pretty quickly when they start playing finals.
Exactly. So, we weren't... And then we hear rumblings and, like, there's evidence today he went to the president, am I okay? Yes. There was issues with the footy department, apparently. But overall, I think it's an obsession with Simon Lethlean that's caused this.
Is he pushing every CEO out for one position? He's only going to get one job, isn't he?
Yeah, well, apparently.
He can only do one CEO position at a time.
Andrew Demetrio's got a lot of pull at Carlton. You know, Gil, Andrew have worked with Lethlean. They like Lethlean. I clearly think they're jumping the gun for Lethlean. And now they've said, he'll have to go through a process. Oh, of course. Yeah. So
we'll jump around. Exhaustive
international search. And he'll end up getting it. So
it's funny how that happens.
Yeah, when Hawthorn fell, although then Jeff Kennett, our man, coming back, said, no, we won't touch Lethlean. I honestly think it's just a bit of an obsession with Simon Lethlean. They want him. Collingwood could have got him or could get him yet.
But was he doing a decent job, Stephen Trigg, or not?
Well, I think he was going okay, but I think there's membership numbers, there was some sponsorship issue. I think there's stuff bubbling along that we don't know about. From the outside, we thought they were going okay.
The public... response to all of this is that Stephen could take us so far but couldn't take us to the next step.
So
I don't really know what that means, and I think it's but I think it's an interesting time for Carlton if this is happening to the CEO, that Mark Lagiudice has got a bit of obviously got a bit of a killer instinct about him. Carlton would want to be playing well on the field this year if that's the case.
Put that aside, the interesting time is what Carlton do in this trade period and how they can improve their list, because if they can't improve, they've had 29 changes on that list in the past 2 years. There's still a couple to be made. I think they thought they were good chances to get Devon Smith. I think they thought they were a good chance to get Adam Saad, but they haven't chose Carlton.
So they're getting Kennedy, aren't they?
Kennedy has nominated GWS. Carlton. Yep.
Well, we talked about this earlier this morning, Scotty, that there have been a lot of high-profile players that have been linked to Carlton, Rockcliffe, even Kelly. They were into Kelly. Devon Smith, I felt sure that Devon Smith was going to nominate Carlton. Something happened there. It's an interesting time for them because, does Bryce Gibbs stay or does he go? That's still got to play out. So, interesting.
Now, Kevin Muscat's getting ready for a big season for the mighty Melbourne Victory. They've got a huge opener, if you don't mind, at Etihad Stadium against Sydney FC. He's a great man. Kev, he joins us to kick off season 2017-18. Good morning, Muskie.
Morning, gents. How are you?
We are very, very well. How are you on the eve of the season? Are you nervous?
Not nervous. A little bit anxious, I suppose, because it's put a lot of work in over the last 14 weeks, and get to take all that frustration out, I suppose, on an opposition tomorrow night.
Now, you go into tomorrow night, I imagine it's not ideal the way it's all sort of panned out. Round one of the A-League where you want to set the tone really early and you haven't got Troisi or Barbarossa's due to international duty. Does that annoy you or is that just the way things are?
And Milligan.
Oh, and Milligan, of course.
Look, I suppose there's two parts to it. I mean, at this point in time, it's not so relevant because we've got to concentrate on the players that are available, and we're comfortable and really confident in the squad that we've put together that will go out tomorrow night, and you won't see a different approach from us. We'll go out and try and win the game. But if you want to talk about the code and what's best for the code and how we go forward, it just at some point it needs to be sorted out, because there's a lot of people who have invested financially and emotionally, as you've said, and they want to turn up round one and see their team. But I suppose that's a conversation for another day. At this point in time, it's just concentrating on the players that we've got available. And as I said, we feel we've recruited really well, and we go into the tomorrow night's game with a lot of confidence in what we're going to try and do.
Muskie, the players on the pitch aren't the only ones that are under scrutiny this year. A world first card trial for coaches, the yellow cards and red cards, which the referees can brandish towards emotional and over-emotional coaches on the sidelines. There's a bit of a suggestion that perhaps you might be a nominee for the first card to be dished out by a ref. Is this going to affect your behaviour on the sidelines?
I don't know if that's gone on my past form or my playing form, because I've never seen anyone get sent off for being emotional. And the reality is, well,
Kenny Lowe.
Yeah, well, it must have been more than emotion to be sent off. But look, it's taken away, or it's taken a focus in the limelight onto the coaches. But the reality is that the system has been in place, for the last 12 months, 24 months possibly. But the only difference is now that it's a little bit more theatre and gives the referees, I suppose, an opportunity to force themselves into the limelight even more.
That might be your first yellow card.
I love watching Tom Lynch. I've admired him from afar, so I'd love that opportunity to work with him. And as soon as he lands back in Australia, I'll catch up with him.
I reckon that's a good idea. New coach of the Gold Coast Suns, Stuart Dew, talking about Tom Lynch and his impact and what he thinks he might be able to achieve with Tom Lynch at the helm of the Suns in the next little while as he coaches the Gold Coast. Mark Evans is one of the team that appointed Stuart Dew up there at the Gold Coast. He's the CEO. He's been good enough to join us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Dougie.
Morning, guys.
Great to have you on. A big appointment yesterday, a super important appointment. How interesting and how delicate was that appointment, considering it was pretty level for three blokes, we reckon?
Yeah, look, one of the most pleasing things out of the process was to get to know each of these guys better. And I think we're in good shape in the industry with some very good aspiring coaches. I think probably not just three, probably maybe four or even five guys I think are on the right path and should get a go. And I look forward to watching their careers. Stuart came through at the top of that for us in a number of categories, and he's unbelievably astute about the game, as you're probably reading this morning. But I think the best ability he's got is to collect and galvanise people, communicate to them, and set up this very, very strong cultural framework. I guess he's had a lot of experience with that at Sydney, Hawthorne, Port Adelaide, and sort of the person of the year. So we look forward to helping him through that and trying to get the success that we're looking for.
How important in the end is success at the clubs that these people have been at? I mean, Johnny Barker hasn't been involved in the premiership. Adam Kingsley was at Port Adelaide, I assume. But when they're surrounded by premierships and success, is that a real key measure for a coaching appointment, do you think?
Oh, it certainly helps. I think when you set up a heap of criteria that you're looking for in any major appointment, now, I think that's where you start. And this thing about getting good people that have come from good backgrounds with all those attributes is the formula, I think. Now, it doesn't make it easy at the pointy end of the selection, because everybody has their slight differences, and some stronger in some suits and some stronger in others. And at the end, you just have to go back to what your criteria are that make it the best fit for you. And that's what we did. One of the greatest compliments I could give to Stuart and to other candidates is that they really have this sense that wherever they are now, they have to keep learning to be better for tomorrow. And I reckon part of that has come out of the Level 4 program that the AFL set up, and it really is starting to help these guys consider the complexities of the job.
Dougie, a lot of people will say at the start of the process you already have your person picked that you want to take the job. How extensive was the process for naming Stuart as the coach?
Oh, well, there were two official parts of the process, if you like. That's what people normally call the interview stages. But for me, the equally important was the catch-ups with far more people, probably more than a dozen, to explore them and to explore the opportunity of the Suns. More a one-on-one, just more a casual chat to then work out which of those candidates should come through to an interview selection process, because it does have to be the right marriage between the organisation and the individual. And there's no point wasting people's time if you don't think they're the right fit. So probably after the dozen or so of those catch-ups, it was then the more formal interview stage of round one, with a panel including Neil Craig and Simon Garlick and Matty Clements and myself and Marcus Ashcroft. And we were really pleased with that. Quite difficult then to select a smaller group to come through to a second phase that included Tony Cochran and a couple of our board members and myself. There were some profiling pieces and then right at the end some strong reference checks to sort of validate what we'd seen in the candidates.
Now, Gazza, we can't let you go, Dougie. It's your favourite subject. Where are we at? When's he going to Geelong? What are you getting? What's the latest?
Well, I would like him to stay at the Gold Coast Suns. I told him that that was our preference. He's holidaying in the Maldives at the moment, so I guess this plays out. Still got another couple of weeks to play out. He has indicated he'd like to return to Geelong. And we said, no angst, Gary, we'd love you to stay and genuinely commit to us. But if you want to go, then there'll just be some conditions around that. Let's keep the relationship strong, because if those conditions aren't met, then you're still a Gold Coast Suns player and we'd happily have you back.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club from this morning. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.